Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. It's Friday. We've got a caller in the queue. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. Please do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. We're going to be getting to 781 area code in just a moment. But first, I want to let everyone know how to reach us. Well, we did that already. Also, how to follow us. Sorry, my brain's not, synapses aren't completely firing at 9 in the morning. Apparently, Facebook and Twitter are linked on our Blog Talk Radio account, where you may also follow us, Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Please do. We really appreciate your support on the show, or for the show, rather, and on the show. With that, we'll bring on our caller from 781. Hi there.
Hi, this is Laura.
Oh, Laura from... Florida?
No, I'm from Massachusetts.
Oh, it's a different Laura. Okay, thought this was a previous Laura, but this is a different Laura. Okay, is it L-A-U-R-A?
Yes.
Okay. Hi. Have we spoken with you before?
I don't believe so.
Oh, okay, so you're a first-time caller. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So, Laura, what's going on?
I was just wondering, I feel like my psychic abilities are shifting and I'm pretty much, I feel like they're in control and I don't know how to tone it down.
So you feel overwhelmed by the psychic information that's coming in?
Right. Especially like in my body, like just other people's energies, I don't know how to turn it down.
So, let's get your birthday first. What's your birthday?
October 1st.
It was the whole birthday, please.
Oh,
10-1-1985. 1985, okay. 2-12. She's a 25-7. Just really quick, Laura, you're okay. When you say other people's energy is coming at you and you can't seem to turn it down, do you mean you're hearing their thoughts or do you mean that you're just, are we talking about empathic type of
empathic type abilities? And like, it's hard for me to concentrate sometimes. I'm just like, when I'm around people, like it's hard to focus. Lately, I feel like distracted by, what's going on with them, whether that's empathic or, like you said, thoughts, all of the above.
And do you do readings or anything, like, professionally or on the side?
But I feel help.
Well, I'm sorry. Say that again. We didn't hear you.
I'm not, but I feel like I wonder if that would help because then I would be using it and it wouldn't just be there all the time.
Right. Well, have you done any practice at all? I mean, maybe with your friends or your family members before you start to embark on a professional career doing this. I mean, it's good to get some
classes.
Yeah. You want to see how your skills work in the process of a reading practice, on friends and family. You could do a radio show, like on, we do here, a podcast. I believe that they do like a half hour podcast for free and see if you can connect with some people that you don't know and see how your psychic abilities are working and do some study. I mean, that would be my first suggestion. Neil might have some other suggestions as well. You know, the fact that you're not feeling grounded because you're receiving vibrations from others suggests that you need to do some grounding through meditation or whatever it may be, so you're not feeling so distracted by people around you. Because a good psychic reader is going to be connected to the astral realm, but they're also going to be grounded. They're going to have a good foundation. So you need that balance.
Makes sense.
Neil,
Laura, what is the exact nature of your conflict? I mean, describe it to us.
I feel like body, and I can't, like, I feel like I'm all of a sudden not feeling like myself. And then similarly, I've been noticing more and more thoughts that aren't mine. And I can't seem to get back to being myself very quickly.
Like a thought, give us an example of your thought that isn't yours, a thought that wouldn't be yours that might invade your mind.
A person says, oh, how are you? And I'm picking up on how they are instead of feeling how I am.
Okay. So, you know, let's look at two levels. Let's look at the physical level first so we can rule out absolutely everything. Because I've been a psychic since I was a little boy and I've gone through the same things you have. But let's go through something first without taking any offense, because I ask myself the same questions at times. In your family history, is there any mental illness, any schizophrenia, any mind disorders, anything like that first? Have you ever had any problems, you know, emotional problems where you had to talk to a therapist or anything like that, any conflict in the family situation?
No. I mean, not like that.
Isn't that any, like, you mean anxiety, depression,
anything like that.
She says no.
So here's, you see, what happens, Laura, is that your current soul, your current energy is connecting with probably with some of your past lives. So you will hear, your physical ears will converse with your third ear, and you can hear dialogue going on from one of your past lives when you probably were quite psychic. That's one thing. The other thing is it's always challenging. It's challenging enough to operate with the naked ear, with the physical ear. That's challenging enough. And how we block out, we have no idea how much sound we block out, but it's there all around us. And if we focus on sounds around us, to where we're totally conscious of it, we're amazed at how many sounds there are going on. Now, a part of that is to survive, we have to kind of block it out. When you're a psychic and you're absorbing the energies of others, that's one of the roles of the psychic. Psychics don't really get to occupy their own life. What they have to do is assume people's existence, or they wouldn't be psychic. So you have to kind of train yourself, balance yourself so that you can cope and experience being psychic and at the same time not going crazy over it. Now there is, you know, when we look at your chakras, Laura, your balance chakra is your fourth, your heart. So what that means in this case is that you control your breathing, you control the element of feeling a sense of composure and balance. Don't freak out because you hear these things. If someone asks you how you're doing, you know, when people ask me how I'm doing, I always deflect and ask them. I always keep the attention off myself because I experience what you do. Sometimes I don't need to even ask them. I just start telling them. But
you mean telling them how they're
how
doing?
They're feeling. I'll say, well, I'm okay, but what about that car crash you had 2 days ago, you know? So it's kind of, yeah, that's right. It's fun. Don't freak out. It's fun to be psychic. It's nothing, you know, we don't have to go through Jekyll Hyde like it, you know, we're going through this transformation and we're gripping our throats and we can't stand the noise. No, it's a really a fun balancing act. Listen, you have a gift and now you just have to learn how to balance it with your physical being. And that, to me, is a fun endeavor. I mean, I endorsed fun in it. I tried to stay away from the dramatics. And when I did, I just learned to make peace with myself. Because, you know, your soul is going to do three things. It's going to connect to your present life, as Laura, is going to connect to all your past lives, and it's going to connect to your environment and all the people around you. And you just have to make, you know, it's like watching TV, having a cup of coffee, and glancing down at a book every once in a while. It's not the big thing. So I don't want to dramatize this into something that you need to, you know, really dramatically figure out.
So I want to ask something about when this started happening. When did you start feeling like you were becoming more psychic? Is this something that's always been with you, or has it increased in the last several years, months? What's the timeline?
I think it's always been with me, but I've been starting to understand it more. And in some ways, I think it's increased more because I've gotten more clarity about it.
And how have you gotten more clarity about it? What process have you underwent?
Because I've been getting more affirmation that it really, like, has been all the information I've been giving. I'll get it verified more. So I'll realize what
validation
really wasn't
from people that I was going to ask about that. And that's why in the beginning I was suggesting practicing with your friends, your family, or doing a show, something where you're not getting paid necessarily, but you're getting a chance to practice. So you give feedback to others and they validate what you are picking up about them?
More like, not like they're asking me psychic information, but just if they're asking me about their life or something, and I'll tell them what I think or what I sense, and then they come back and say that was what happened, that was true.
Okay, so that's good. That's obviously, the more that happens, the more accurate. The more accurate you're getting. So,
Laura, it's not a big deal. I mean, you just have to keep practicing at it, and pretty soon, just, you know, when I go outside, if I go into a market or something, I hear 100 people talking, and I can hear their thoughts, and I just, but I'm older than you. I'm twice your age, so the idea. And I've been doing this since I was a little boy. I mean, really every day since I was about 4 years old. So it takes a little time. Thank God you're not, you know, I had trouble because I was also seeing people and I was trying to figure out who was real and who wasn't. I mean, in the physical world. So I was like that kid in The Sixth Sense, you know, that I was seeing people as well as hearing and stuff like that. And, it's a gift. It's a gift. You just have to learn. You just have to talk to yourself. Like I said, balance. There's breathing. There's, you know, you got to keep telling yourself that you're not freaking out, that you're okay. And then you'll learn how to adjust to the quote noise that has definition. I like to call it noise with definition because you're hearing noise, but it has definition. like, you know, how your refrigerator hums, you know, if there's a TV in the background, a siren going on, birds chirping, you know, the fan above your head. Think about it. You have all these sounds going on, and you've learned to identify them at any given moment, but you don't go crazy. So you hear people talk. Do you walk?
Some people go crazy over those sounds.
Maybe some people. But when you walk into a store and you hear the cashier register and people want to exchange things and people are saying, "Oh, do you have any milk today?" You know, you don't go. I'm going crazy. You know, it's the same thing with the psychic element.
Well, there's probably a part of her that feels also overwhelmed by the emotional state that she's absorbing of other people. So, I mean, when you're hearing a fan above your head or a cash register or people in the store, I mean, there's the process of having to separate those sounds and identify them and understand them being in the world, but dealing with being an empath and absorbing people's emotions, that is, it's a different category, I think.
You know,
so you
I
have
mean,
to separate that.
You have to learn. You're not the world savior. You don't have to save everybody you hear. At times it might be challenging. You know, if you're driving the car and you see a dog hitting the street and struggling to the curb, it's disturbing. If you're going by somebody who has a really disturbing inner monologue going on and you're listening to it, it can be disturbing. But again, you know, you adjust accordingly. You adjust because you have to tell yourself you don't have to save everybody and you don't have to dramatically interact with everybody. Some things you just let it be. Your internal ear won't necessarily shut off. It's like, you know, you turn your TV off, but it still goes on. Your internal ear doesn't have to shut off. So what you have to do is sort of learn how to sleep with it and let it be. I mean, it will tone down at times, but don't go crazy over it. And I don't think not that you would, but don't take medication for it. You want to keep your brainwaves free of those kinds of things. But I don't know, is this helping or not?
That helps a lot, what you said about you're not the world savior. It's nail on the head. It's hard to know when to act on what you hear and know and when not to.
You know, you're not. Just like if you go to a doctor and you go, doctor, I've been coughing horribly and I feel miserable. Then your doctor doesn't go, you're kidding. What are you going to do? You know, the doctor keeps coming, and that's what you should do, and that's what I had to learn. I'm not to save the world, and I don't have to everybody that I encounter.
Even in the event that a doctor, you're talking about a cold, but a doctor oftentimes has to diagnose people with terminal illnesses, and so obviously that doctor has been trained, gone to school, gone through residency and become a doctor. And, you know, obviously strengthen all his skills so that he can deal with situations like that. It's the same thing with being psychic. You know, it's not just like you come off the street and I'm psychic and I'm going to, you know, be able to handle all this immediately.
Right.
It's a process.
You know, there's a phrase in crime, if you will, not just crime, but it's called the silent partner. And when you're a silent partner, you're a partner to somebody's business, but you're not on record. You can become a silent partner to humanity. And what the way psychics do that, at least this psychic, is that if I encounter someone who's really messed up and I have no access to helping them, I just send an angel to them. I send a guide to them, and I've done my part. It's unspoken. I'm a silent partner in psychic interaction, and that's it. And, you know, if you have access to the psychic world, there's two ways. You can be psychic, and that's all within the internal construction, and you can also have connections with guides, spirits, angels. And all you've got to do, ask and ye shall receive. Ask out of your own sense of ego, out of your ego, to send an angel to that person, to send a guide to that person, to bless that person, and just do it in your mind. that's what it's about too, Laura.
That's beautiful. I like that.
Okay, well, I don't know. Is there anything else? She's never
now,
called before.
So I hope that helped. I'm on my way to the psychiatrist now because what I just said caused me a lot of stress, so I have to work it out.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
it. She's not laughing.
I'm joking.
Wait, no, he's making a joke. He's making a joke. But you know what? We have a little bit more time, so we're going to keep you. Do you have a couple minutes, Laura? Let's keep you on the line for
a
few questions.
Because
what do you do in life? What's your
profession?
What is your job occupation?
Children, but right now we're not open because of COVID. So I think that that's also why I've had more time to understand myself better.
I'm getting there.
Oh, I was just going to say the way that you said what you're experiencing is present life, past life, and environment. That helps a lot because I think that's really true and I need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, separating what you're hearing, it can be difficult because it can be other people's thoughts, but it can be your own internal dialogue, whether it is past life or present life or not, you know. What year would that have been? So your master number, 2010. So, well, it'll be 2010, 2011 because she's born at the end of the year. So your karmic number is 25, your master number 7, and you would have had a change in 2010, 2011.
This is
Do you remember what happened?
I got sick, and actually a lot of my gifts started opening up because I remember I started writing a lot. I started doing channeled writing, and I didn't really know what I was doing at the time. It just happened.
And what was the nature of your illness?
Just an autoimmune illness.
Okay. Okay, so that's what your change was.
Yeah, your linear code and your birth date suggests some trouble in your childhood. I mean, I don't know. Were your parents divorced? Your number suggests some turmoil somewhere back there before or around the age of 12.
Any difficulty, like financially in your family, anything like that?
I don't know.
You don't know. So your parents still married?
Mm-hmm.
They're still together.
There's got to be something. You know, what do you think, Laura, is the most traumatic thing? You know, you have an autoimmune
We're
going
to get to the next caller in a moment.
We're going to spend 2 more minutes on you. You had an autoimmune disease. Do you know what that was all about?
I think it was quite literally my sensitivity is shifting and my body was adjusting to it.
Was there a diagnosis, though, that was made or medication that was prescribed? I mean, on a physical level, you're saying it's not an autoimmune disorder, but you're associating it with your psychic changes, which may very well be true, but were you under treatment of a physician and are you still suffering from that autoimmune disorder?
I was under care. Yeah.
But you're in remission now from that?
For the most part, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I went through that stuff too. I get it. Well, I hope this has helped. I mean, if some of this has helped, we just want to get a rundown. A lot of psychics have troubled childhoods and stuff like that.
Yeah, the 10-1. Doctor.
Yeah, the autoimmune probably was coming from a past life incorporated into the molecular and cellular structure of this lifetime in your consciousness. So it came from something dramatic that happened in a past life. And that drama that happened in the past life probably was the instigator to you being psychic. So let's say in a past life you were executed or killed or burned at the stake or something. That energy continue to reinvent itself in this lifetime and incorporate itself as it morphed into your autoimmune deficiency,
rather than,
which then led to doorway to being psychic again.
Rather than her having difficulty in the family,
yeah,
which would be indicated by the code. Your parents get along well. There's no problems,
yeah,
with siblings, nothing like that. Laura?
No, just like, yeah, you know, normal stuff.
Normal family stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
so
a past-life trauma. But, you
yeah
know, it all reinvents itself to activate your psychic abilities in this lifetime.
Yeah.
Okay, Laura, well, hopefully that helped.
Yes, thank you. Have a nice day. I appreciate
you
it.
You too. Good luck. And Laura can join us on Facebook and Twitter. Hopefully she will like our pages. 302 is on the air. Hello.
Hi, Neil and Kristen. How are you? This is Gloria.
Hey, Gloria. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Neil, first I wanted to thank you for saying that just because we have certain gifts or, you know, we're psychic or whatever, that we don't have to go and rescue everyone, because I think that was something that I had to learn along the way. It's really hard not to not feel like you have to help anyone or everyone. And it becomes overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to go through that too.
Yeah. But my original question was about the Kundalini awakening. I'm on a spiritual group on Facebook, and I brought that topic up. And one person said that not everyone will go through it in their lifetime or can go through it. She said her spirit guides told her that not everyone will go through one. And I understand what Kundalini is and, you know, the energy and all that, but I'm just wondering, without having a mentor or someone helping you out through it, like, how do you know you're having one, and will everyone have one?
You will know not everyone's going to have one. And the Kundalini awakening, yeah, there should be guidance.
Yeah, there should be guidance, because the Kundalini is basically, it inhabits the base of your first chakra.
Right.
We all have a Kundalini, and we all can get a whiff of it, if you will, in deja vu or in a dream or, you know, in some, no pun intended, first chakra. I said a whiff of it, and then Kristen made a mistake. But I guess I was using the wrong verb. Although maybe you can get it.
Anyway, okay. Let's move on to a higher, wonderful, yes.
But
well,
anyways,
the base of the spine specifically,
yeah,
not necessarily.
It rests in there, and they, you know, it's an energy of awareness. So what happens when it is, it can be released organically. I mean, sometimes in dreams it will come out and then go back in. But to consciously have your Kundalini out is a different matter, because the sixth chakra has to kinetically connect to that energy and wake it up, and then it gradually goes through each chakra system and awakens it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 awakens it until there's spiritual, yeah, spiritually divine inspirational energy going on. You know, some people mistaken that the Kundalini can be released through drugs, and that can be, you know, people who drop acid. It just zooms out of control, but it comes with a kind of a poisoned entry level, and that is not good. The best way to awaken the Kundalini is, yes, you have a guide who knows what they're doing, and it's a breath experience, and it's, you guide it through, and there's experiences, because the Kundalini occupies two things. It occupies cosmic awareness of the universe and all time and space. And then it also occupies individual consciousness. So when it's going through your chakras, it taps into each of your chakra systems on a holistic level, meaning that chakra occupying what's happening in your lifetime. But then it spreads into your past lives. And then it opens up into universal concepts of the first chakra, meaning the beginning of time and space and earth, the creation. And we get into that attitude that when the Kundalini is open, it's about awareness. It's called the fiery, you know, the fire, the spiral, the energy field. And they determine it's like a snake because of the idea of the lotus tree or the tree of knowledge. So the inspiration is that energy is absolutely there. When you see, and then the thing about the snake is that it crawls on the ground, then it rises when it's going to strike, and it lifts its head up, and then its tongue is typically forked. So there's an essence of duality in the Kundalini, meaning that there's a yin and a yang, a light and a dark, a good and an evil, but it occupies the scope of all awareness. So I know we're getting into philosophical matters.
Well, I mean, she's asking, is everybody going to go through a Kundalini awakening? Obviously not. One, and two, what I wanted to say is I remember someone we dealt with many years ago who thought her Kundalini was awakened, but she was very, very unstable. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And she was, I mean, very unstable. Had a lot of emotional and mental problems. So, I mean,
the Kundalini doesn't promise you're going to be stable. It just opens itself up.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is, though, you know, if it is if there is an activation that is not done properly, then it can cause mental instability in someone who's, you know, prone to.
You know, we all have it. Matters. We all have it because it's the source of knowledge. But it's to the degree of how it's activated. And some of us can experience it haphazardly, like in a dream or a deja vu. But that is not the sense of control over it, Gloria. What controls it is taming it, getting it, making a relationship with it, talking to it, taming it like an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a interactive connection, because the Kundalini will give you knowledge as you are training it to emerge. But I know, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to ask, is it necessary in a spiritual journey? Like, do you have to awaken your Kundalini in order to have more, I don't know, awareness in your spiritual path? Like, is it necessary?
Well, you see, it's a mixed message. Because if you're on a spiritual journey, naturally, your desire would be to open it up. But can you be on a spiritual journey and not even know the word?
Yes.
You don't.
Okay.
You know, the Kundalini is about awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a necessity. You can be spiritual. You can be psychic. Uh-huh. Not know anything about the Kundalini. But the Kundalini is sort of knowing that your vehicle can do something you didn't know it could do before. Oh, did you know if you push this button, it's jet expulsion and your car can go immediately to 60 miles an hour, but you got to press this button. You know, it's an added energy that if a human being is inclined to venture into that curious world of cosmic knowledge and go deep, then it's already going to be activated in their soul, but that's part of their journey. And they're going to know. So they'll discover it. But, you know, Gloria, you can be psychic, you can be spiritual, and you don't have to have the Kundalini to get into the highest realms. It's an enhancement of knowledge.
Okay, right. Because it's mentioned a lot sometimes in the spiritual forums, and I'm just like, it's almost like talked about so much that they make it just seem like it's a regular. It just happens regularly, and I often don't pay attention when people start throwing that word around
Probably a good idea, because I think that the authenticity to really awaken Kundalini is not a common occurrence. I mean, as you ask, does everybody go through a Kundalini awakening? Well, is everyone enlightened after they're done, you know, at the end of their journey on the planet? No.
You know, look at it like track and field. You want to go into track and field. Well, do you do any pole vaulting? No. Well, then you must not be in track and field. No, I am in track and field. Pole vaulting would be the Kundalini. You know, if you're okay. good at pole vaulting, it's just, it's an added element in the arena of activity of the psychic realm. It's just something extraordinarily that you do.
Right, and does someone need a Kundalini awakening in order to transcend the planet? No, because, you know, there can be individuals that are full of faith and they have, you know, they are spiritual people that are not, I mean, they're not even psychic necessarily, and their works can transcend them. It doesn't mean that you have to have all these skills.
And you have
to be able
careful
to get off the planet.
The way people throw that word around. I mean, a true Kundalini experience doesn't boast. It doesn't really. You can tell when someone's had a Kundalini experience by the very essence of their activity and behavior. They're enlightened to such an extent that you're almost inspired. They seem to have information that you know is accurate, but inspired and almost transcendent in its nature of conversation. There's something extraordinary about it, like seeing an excellent athlete. You just know, wow, there's something special. It's a gift, but it transcends the regular, you know, you go into gymnastics, you see somebody, and then you see a star. You see somebody and you think, oh my God, that's amazing. Kundalini's experience is an amazing experience.
She dropped. She's back. Okay.
You guys kind of blanked out on me. Like, it's all of a sudden.
Yeah, your call dropped.
Yeah.
I saw someone that dropped out of the queue, but I didn't realize it.
Well,
you
can go back and listen to the archives.
Yeah,
you know,
I will.
You're just saying it's an amazing experience. It's something that's extraordinarily above the average. And you can tell.
Yeah, I'm afraid of it. I don't think it's meant for, like you said, Neil and Kristen, I don't think it's meant for people to do it on their own. I just am so intimidated by it. So, but I was just wondering about the process. That's all.
Yeah, you don't need to touch it. You can stay away.
No.
From it.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't touch the Facebook group to guide you in the process if you're even thinking about.
Oh, no. I was just curious about, you know.
Yeah.
About the question, what I asked you guys is whether someone actually needs to go through it in their spiritual awakening. Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay, Gloria, have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Now I've highlighted every call here. Okay, 347 is our next caller. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, we can hardly hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Better.
All right. Okay. Hey, how you doing? My name is Jasmine.
Hi, Jasmine.
Yeah. So my question is, I was talking to somebody and like text messaging, and I just stopped texting. And I wanted to know, like, if you think that he'll contact me or whatever.
I thought you were going to talk about a relationship.
She's not going to text him.
No, it is really hard to hear you. I don't know if you can talk. No. She's been texting.
Oh.
Can you talk into the receiver?
Yeah, I got to be able to hear you because I thought you were talking about texting.
All right, we was just texting. That's it, and I stopped texting him, and I didn't get a response.
Okay, and I mean, I don't know. You just, how did you start, how did this relationship, you just started texting this person randomly. How did you meet?
No, we've been knew each other, but
okay.
I'm just saying that
yeah.
he was texting, and I stopped texting first. And I wanted to see if he was going to text me. So I'm asking you if you think that he'll text me.
Huh?
Well.
Is he in the Bay of Texas? It's really
well,
tough
you
to
know,
hear.
I mean, a lot of people who do in this texting world, they throw a lot out to a lot of different people. And if this person connected to somebody before they had a chance to connect to you, that might be going on. You know, so it might be a bad timing, Jasmine. I'm not sure because did the person even acknowledge that you exist?
Yeah, right. We talk every morning, but not like all the time. We're not in a relationship. Like he told me that he talked to other people, so I'm cool with that. But like, stop texting first. So you say he may be talking to somebody from somebody that he been was talking to from before.
Jasmine, what's your birth date? What's your birth date?
It's next month on the 10th.
You're on the 10th, your birthday. You're 5'10"?
Uh-huh.
What year?
Oh, yeah. No, April 10th, this month.
Oh, this month. 4'10", what year?
96.
86. Are you the one? I remember you.
It's 96.
Well, you're not speaking clearly. 5'15", she's a 30 equals 3. And I remember you because you had a problem with your job, like sneaking into the stadium. Is that you?
Yes.
Yeah. And you were living in a shelter. What's your living situation now? What's going on? You had problems with your brother.
Oh, my God. I left and I came back. I didn't want to talk about this. But now I live in a hotel.
Okay.
So it's free.
Yeah, I think this person is busy texting or connecting with somebody else, so I wouldn't take it personally. Jeff. You know, when you go into that world, it's hard to make connections in the first place. And then a lot of people are just kind of searching around for anybody. And they can connect for a minute and then disconnect. It's not a really healthy world, but that doesn't mean you can't find somebody on it, but it's difficult. And, you know, when you get somebody who is not really well grounded and really specifically paying attention to one particular person and they're just kind of running around like crazy, texting, there's probably a lot of people this person has texted and said, where did he go? What happened? You know, so it doesn't, I wouldn't take it personally. I think the main thing is, you know, if you're really seeking a relationship, let's put out an energy that you find somebody really important on the internet, if that's where you're going.
She also.
No, I'm not really looking for a relationship. I just wanted to know, like, that situation. Because I didn't speak to him all day, all yesterday. Because I stopped texting. I just wanted to see something. But if it's like that, then I don't care. Like, I will not text back ever again.
Yeah.
But thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right, Karen, hi. Is this Karen? 312. Oh, she has us on hold. Can you hear us? 312, hello. She's spaced out. She's, you know, Karen with the apartment in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now we have Kate. Hello.
Hello.
What is going on? Okay. Try to bring on 312 again. I don't know if we're having trouble being heard or what. 312, are you there or not? Okay. Now I hear her, but...
I can hear her, but it's not...
Okay. So with the remaining time, since no one seems to be answering, we can finish what we were talking, our conversation, or at least get back into the conversation we were having on Wednesday, which, remember, we were talking about one's intent in life, and if you set out to do the right thing and help others, that that's what's recognized. We're talking about the example of, you know, being someone who helps people cross the border illegally, trying to bring people to safety. Ironically, what happened that day is two Ecuadorian toddlers were dropped over the wall, which is not funny. I shouldn't be laughing about it. I'm not. I'm laughing about the irony of our conversation. Obviously, this person who was helping do the border crossing maybe needed some more training as far as how to safely get children across the border, because this was a disaster.
It reminds me of the UPS, it's a different element, but the UPS driver who threw the package over the fence because he couldn't, and he broke it.
Yeah, it was a little bit more dramatic. I mean, you know, we're dealing with people's lives, not a package.
You know, you just don't deliver something and throw it across like discarded destination. But I don't know. Well, how was that?
Because we were talking about, well, that was an example about how people maybe that could be viewed as doing the wrong thing or putting people's lives in danger by escorting them over the border. And then these people end up getting killed. But could their fate have been worse had they, or not worse? I mean, what's worse than dying? Nothing. But the conditions of their life previously, I mean, these people that are helping people cross the border are, if they're doing it properly, are their intention is in the right place, even if tragedy does occur at the end of the line, you know?
Yeah, well, we have genocides and we have all these terrible things going on, whether it's the Holocaust or things happening in El Salvador or in Mexico or any of the countries that where there's terrible persecution, and we have people trying to assist and help others, and there's tragedy along the way. I mean, that's a sad story, but the human element of it is that it's a reality. Sometimes in the midst of trying to help somebody, it leads to tragedy. You have to look at the consequences of do you take a stand to try to help, and maybe in the midst of it, that tragedy is experienced, or do you just let the ultimate original tragedy occur because you're too afraid of the outcome of possibilities that could occur? I think that part of human activity is that we have to make an attempt from the beginning to be active, to not accept violence or oppression or anything that would otherwise be deemed as genocidal in nature, that we have to motivate ourselves to save others, to even if it means risking our own life. But in that area, that as soon as we do, that is our keep. We are keepers of the people we try to save. We're responsible for that energy.
You know, it brings up another person, actually, Mother Teresa, who is actually quite controversial, and people may not know this. And I'm not making a judgment because I don't have enough information. But obviously, this is a person who is, I think is being considered for canonization. And she saved scores of people off the streets of Calcutta, India. But there's a darker side if you investigate Mother Teresa, because apparently she didn't believe in pain medication because she believed that if you were stricken with illness, then your lot in life was to suffer. So she didn't medicate people in her clinics. And then there was money that was that she raised in her mission to help others. And it was like millions was funneled to the Vatican. And she also aligned herself with some political leaders that were despots and oppressors of innocent people. So someone who obviously helped so many people, but then has this other side, which I can't confirm. I haven't done enough research myself to make a decision. But, you know, what's the dichotomy in an individual that's helping others yet?
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't be one that would necessarily connect to the idea that it's one's fate to suffer.
No.
I think it's one's responsibility to help the suffering. To me, it's a different category of thinking. So, you know what? I mean, in Hawaii, it was once considered if you were born with a birthmark or a defect, you were an outcast. And there's this famous book, James Michener, Hawaii, where Catholic missionaries brought on in opening arms a person that had a terrible facial defect that was considered an outcast, made him their kind of manservant. I hate to use that word, but it motivated the person and gave that person meaning, and there was some acceptance of that energy. So even if there's ill intent, I mean, trying to colonize and missionize the Hawaiians and convert them to Christianity.
Well, which is another reason Mother Teresa was criticized.
Yeah.
Too.
That I don't know about that one. But the humanity behind the essence of it, I think, is also that part of that duality.
Well, they would try to baptize, apparently, these Hindi people on their deathbed, and they would try to get consent, and these surreptitious baptisms taking place with, like, you know, cloths that were soaked in water, you know, wiping their fevered brows or whatever, but they were really being baptized, etc. But anyway, we've got a caller that we might be able to hear. So let's see. What is going on? Can you hear us, 248?
I can. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. Good. My name is Joe, and I was told to let you know that my girlfriend is Jen from Canada.
Oh, hi. Hi. What's your birthday? You're from Detroit.
I am. Well, suburbs. I'm about 20 minutes northwest of downtown right now.
Okay, and we have I think we have your birthday somewhere, but not right in front of us. So you're September what? Second?
17th.
Oh, 17th. Okay, but there's something. What's the year?
1971.
1971. So what am I remembering? 27, 28. What's your question?
Well, she told me that I should call and ask you for a reading.
Okay, we've got about 4 minutes, so we're calling a little bit at the tail end of the show.
Okay.
Is there a specific question you have?
No, not really. No specific question.
27, 28, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 35, 8. So you would have had a change in 2000. And six, what happened in 2006 when you were 35? When you're 35.
What happened when I was 35?
Yeah.
Nothing happened when I was 35.
Well,
Jen just sent me a text, and she said that I should ask you about my issues with crossing the border into Canada.
Oh, because of the lockdown?
Well, I got permission to be able to go in. The government has a form, but I was turned away for other issues, for something in my background that happened about 20 years ago.
So something like a criminal?
Yeah, financial crime.
Okay.
Well, first of all, Joe, have you gone through anything beyond high school? Did you get an education, a degree? Did you earn anything?
I have a degree.
Yeah, that's what I'm picking up. So when we go to the element of the age of 35, by then you probably had your degree already. But when
for 14 years.
Okay, so for 14 years. So when we talk about, so that meant that you got it around the age of 21. So when we talk about the attitude of how we make changes in life and the migrations of energy, how we move through that, given the fact that you've had a spotted history of some financial indiscretion. And so that kind of disturbed your energy, because that would have meant that you were probably connecting to something deep in your soul that you knew better not to do, but you did it anyway. So this impulse of energy probably overwhelmed you at that time. We don't have to go through the details. But here's the thing. I think you're bound to connect and get over to Canada. I don't personally see a problem with that. I mean, aside from just going through the measures.
The logistics currently, whatever he's facing. I mean, question. I mean, obviously, there was never a problem crossing the border before this COVID happened, right?
Right.
And now they're looking more closely at people who come in and out of Canada. I mean, it's just a little odd to me that a financial crime would prevent you.
No.
Given it's not a violent crime, I don't understand why you'd be prevented from entering.
Yeah. Well, they said you can apply to the consulate to be allowed entry into Canada if it's more than 5 years since your conviction. In my case, it's been a lot more than 5 years since the conviction. I just was not cognizant of the fact that there's paperwork to complete.
Just complete the paperwork, Joe, and you'll be fine. I mean, they don't want any dangerous or compromising elements in their,
right,
in their country. That, you know, that's just standard. But if you fill out the proper paperwork, then I don't perceive there's going to be any problem. But I do want to ask you something before we part. And this is aside from the questions we're talking about. In your history, back in your history with your family, somebody, was there any alcohol problem with anyone that you're familiar with in your background?
No.
No. Then I think you're going to be able to cross. What I'm trying to get a hook on is if there's a karmic reason why you wouldn't be able to cross, if there's something in the element of time and space that would obstruct you. I mean, according to, you say it's been well over 5 years, maybe it's been 10 years.
Well, you said 20.
It's been
20.
Yeah.
Oh, 20?
Yep.
So
2001. In July will be 20 years.
No, I don't think you're going to have a problem. I mean, if that's what you're asking, I'm not picking up a problem if you go, like you said, to the proper paperwork.
And you're drinking, you just drink socially?
I really don't even like alcohol.
So, no.
See, the thing about your energy here is real quick, Joe. You're born on the 17th and then inverted the year of 71. So you're meant to... The difficulty you're having getting connected to Jen has to do with the past life you've had with her. So how many years have you known Jen?
15 months.
15 months?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so
yeah.
When it gets to be 16 months, which is a multiple of your age, by eight, you'll be over there in a month.
Okay.
Do they give you an idea how long that paperwork takes to be processed?
Nope, they didn't. I have a feeling it's a few weeks.
So there you go. If you get on the paperwork, month is the prediction.
Okay.
Yeah, you have a, what's Jennifer's birthday?
She's 4370. I mean, his eight is broken up by his, in his day and year.
You see, but her up to her year comes to 17. So there's a past life going on with her, and her whole number is 21, and 21 was when he...
Her whole number is 24.
4370?
Yeah. She's 24-6.
Oh, 24-6?
Yeah.
Well, the 17 at least connects to the energy, and the 6 and the 8 is 14.
Yeah, and she has it's a 17 cross, and it's also a 17 if you take the century in her year, 7-1. So she's got it, they've got kind of a reflection thing going on in the year.
Yeah.
I mean, even though the years are interchangeable, your 7 to Jen's 0 becomes her year, Joe, and her 7 to your 1 becomes your year, 71. But if you look at her year 1970, that seven and the century is essentially your year in inverted day, 17.
Mm.
So there's a connection. Anyway, that's all we have time for, but thanks
okay.
for calling.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye. All right. We're back on the air next week, Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Take care.